neighborhood despite Jianju's last will and testament. Nobles who claimed trickery after watching her twirl water and earth above her head with their own eyes suddenly became true believers when they thought she could aid them in biting off greater mouthfuls of wealth and power in the endless hierarchies of the Earth Kingdom. The Avatar could settle where a provincial border lay and which governor got to claim taxes from a rich cropland. The Avatar could speed a trade fleet along its route safely, protecting the lives of the sailors, but ultimately ensuring a massive profit for its merchant backers. Couldn't she? Kiyoshi soon learned to ignore such requests and focus on what she could wreak with her own hands. "Those messages can wait," she said. She secretly hoped the stack of correspondence would blow away into dust if she sounded cold and authoritative enough. Jinpa gave her a gentle but chiding look. "Avatar, if I may be permitted, you have to participate in high society to some extent. You can't keep putting off the leadership of the Earth Kingdom forever." "The Earth Kingdom doesn't have leadership," Kiyoshi thought. "I helped kill the closest thing to a leader it had." "The duties of your role extend beyond being a powerful bender," he went on. "You've scrubbed the countryside of the largest bandit groups, and it's impressive you were able to track down this mock person and keep him from hurting more innocent people. But at this point, you're running yourself ragged simply so you can beat up the same bad men you've already beaten up in the past. Is scraping the bottom of the criminal barrel truly the most good you could do for the Four Nations? Not to mention the risks it poses to your personal safety." "It's what I know. And it's the only way I can be sure what I'm doing is right." They'd had this conversation before, many times, but Jinpa never grew tired of reminding her. Unlike the other air nomads she'd met, who prized detachment from the world, he was constantly pushing her to engage in a higher level of discourse with the very people who sought to exploit her. He wasn't much older than Kiyoshi, slightly on the other side of 20 years, so it was strange when he spoke like a political tutor trying to guide a wayward pupil. "At some point, you will have to stand upon a greater stage," Jinpa said. "The Avatar creates ripples in the world, whether they mean to or not." "Is that a saying among your mysterious friends whom you won't tell me about?" she retorted. He merely shrugged at her clumsy attempt to change the subject. That was the other frustrating thing about Jinpa. He wouldn't trade jabs with her like Karima or Wong. He showed her too much respect, a problem her old companions never had, even after learning she was the Avatar. She wondered what would happen if the monk ever met the remaining members of the Flying Opera Company. She could imagine Jinpa offering them assistance in escaping the Daofei lifestyle. They probably would have tried to steal his bison. There was only one thing that could get her to talk to the sages. None of the letters mentioned Master Yun? No, unfortunately. He has yet to turn up. Kiyoshi exhaled, a long hiss through her teeth. During the period where the world thought Yun was the Avatar, he had focused a great deal of effort on treating with the Earth Kingdom's elite, which meant they were the only people who knew his face. Without a lead from someone who recognized him, finding one man in the entirety of the Earth Kingdom was like looking for a single pebble in a gravel pit. "Let's try bumping up the reward again." "I don't know if that'll help," Jinpa said. "The prominent figures of the Earth Kingdom lost a lot of face as a result of Master Yun's misidentification. If I were them, I wouldn't want him to resurface. I would want to pretend the whole episode never happened. I hear Liu Beifeng forbids anyone in his household, guests included, to speak of Jianju or his disciple." Jinpa had a strange amount of access to political gossip for a simple air nomad. but his observations were usually correct. That blasted Pricklethorn Lu. As Genju's backer, the Beifeng Patriarch was just as guilty in Kyoshi's eyes for the mistake in identifying the Avatar, and he continued to cast off any further responsibility in the matter. She'd begged Liu Beifeng in person to help her find Yun, expecting the old man to have some semblance of grandfatherly attachment to him. Instead, Liu coldly revealed that the letter Genju had sent to sages across the Earth Kingdom, proclaiming Kyoshi to be the Avatar, also said Yun was dead. Between Genju's final words and Kyoshi's confused testimony of the incident in Qinqiao, Liu chose to believe what was most convenient for him. As far as he was concerned, the scandal had resolved itself. A victory for neutral Jing. Jinpa gave her a smile out of sympathy. No one's asking you to give up your search for the false Avatar, but maybe... Don't call him that! Her rebuke echoed through the room. Thinking about how easily Yun had been abandoned, first by Genju, then by Liu and the rest of the Earth Kingdom, had set her back on edge. Jinpa avoided her gaze, lowering his head. In the awkward silence, he wiggled his foot nervously. She didn't need bending to feel the tremors through the floor. I'll send word of Master Yun's description to every major passport-checking way station I can, he said. It's the job of such officials to match names and appearances. They'll be paying closer attention than your average bystander. It was a good idea. Better than any she'd had so far. She felt doubly bad for losing her temper. She needed to apologize for her outburst, needed to stop having such outbursts if she and Jinpa were to ever shorten the distance between them. But she was fearful of what lay at the end of friendships. She had been a danger to every companion she ever had. And she still couldn't shake the memories of an air nomad who gave her jokes and warmth and easy smiles. Make it happen, Kyoshi said curtly. Jinpa nodded. Then he paused, as if wondering how to frame his next statement. I didn't open all of today's letters. One of them came by special courier. Half the letters we get are by special courier, Kyoshi scoffed. Grandiose deliveries with envelopes stamped with urgent and for the Avatar's eyes only in loud green ink were common tricks the Earth sages tried in order to grab her attention. This one is genuinely special. Jinpa reached into his robe and pulled out a message tube he'd been safekeeping. It was red. The sturdy metal tube was end-capped with gilded flames. In the surroundings of the staid but clearly Earth Kingdom furnishings of the apartment, the scroll case looked like an ember in a forest, threatening to catch. An army of wax seals guarded the seams. Jinpa passed it to her with both hands, like an object of reverence. I believe this is from Fire Lord Zoryu himself. Her first direct correspondence from a head of state. Kiyoshi had never met the Fire Lord, nor had he ever written her before. The only contact she'd had with the Fire Nation government was the envoy who'd visited her in Yokoya soon after the news broke of her avatarhood. The sharply dressed minister had watched her raise a modicum of all four elements, nodding to himself as each one was checked off in turn. He'd saluted Kiyoshi, politely stayed for dinner, and then left for his homeland the next morning to report the new state of affairs. She remembered appreciating the lack of grief the foreign delegate gave her in comparison to her own countrymen. Breaking the seals and opening the case felt like damaging a historical artifact. Kiyoshi kept as much of the wax's original shape as she could and unfurled the scroll inside. The writing was direct and to the point, devoid of the flourishes Earth Kingdom officials thought were necessary to curry favor with her. Lord Zoryu needed the Avatar's assistance on a matter of national importance. If she would come visit the royal palace as his honored guest to celebrate the upcoming festival of Sito, a significant holiday in the Fire Islands, he could explain further in person. "What does it say?" Jinpa asked. "It's an invitation to visit the Fire Nation. A debut on the world stage." She swallowed the nervousness that had suddenly clumped in her throat. Jinpa saw her hesitation and clasped his hands together, beseeching. "This is exactly what I'm talking about, Avatar. The four nations aren't going to let you remain out of the public eye forever. Please don't tell me you'd snub the Fire Lord, of all people." Kyoshi mulled it over. She doubted the ruler of the Fire Nation would waste her time with a frivolous request for help. And her frustrations with her own country were threatening to push her past her breaking point. A change of scenery might be called for. "And it's a holiday festival," Jinpa added. "You might even have fun. You are allowed to enjoy yourself from time to time, you know." Leave it to an air nomad to fall back on fun as the last argument. "You can write back and tell the Fire Lord I am honored to accept his invitation," she said. "We'll start planning the trip tomorrow. I don't think I can handle any more business for today." Jinpa bowed solemnly, hiding his satisfaction that finally the Avatar was stepping up to her responsibilities. No one needs their rest more than the Avatar. He left the room for the office they'd set up down the hall. Alone, Kyoshi stared at the cream-colored paper in silence. She hadn't mentioned to Jinpa the portion of the letter that tipped the scales in favor of the visit. It was a very specific piece of news at the end of the Fire Lord's message. The former headmistress of the Royal Academy had returned home after a long convalescence in Agna Kella, the capital of the Northern Water Tribe. So had her daughter. Perhaps the Avatar would like to see them, given the three had been acquaintances in Yokoya. They certainly wished to see her. Acquaintances. Kiyoshi didn't know it was possible to feel such relief and distress at once. She wasn't in the Fire Nation yet, and already she could picture who was waiting for her. The walking blaze of pure heat and confrontation. In the darkness of her exhaustion, a point of shining light beckoned. Rangi. Kiyoshi carefully folded the paper and tucked it into her robes, close to her thumping heart. Despite her secretary's wishes, she was not going to be getting much sleep tonight. Past Lives. Jinpa's bison, Yingyang, had only 5 feet instead of the usual 6. As a calf, he'd been attacked by a predator and lost his left forelimb. As an adult, the injury caused him to list slightly to the side when he was flying, which required Jinpa to give a gentle tug with the reins in the opposite direction every so often to maintain a straight course through the air. Kiyoshi had gotten used to traveling in Yingyang's arcs. Kelsang's bison, Peng Peng, was busy raising calves of her own at the southern temple in a well-deserved retirement, and Kiyoshi had never expected the relationship to be permanent. Peng Peng might have been willing to put up with her, may have even liked her, but only a single air nomad could truly partner with one of the great beasts for life. She and Jinpa flew a little lower than usual on their way to the Fire Nation, close to the green waters of the Mosa Sea, where the air was warm and easy to breathe. The beautiful weather allowed it. Scoops of clouds drifted overhead in the blue sky, providing little pockets of shade for them to dip between. If Kyoshi missed anything from those days after she fled Yokoya on Peng Peng's back, it was these little in-between moments of travel. Most people would have assumed that floating on a bison with the breeze against her face was calming, but for Kyoshi, the upside was very different. Taking to the air gave her the assurance that for once, by default, she was doing the best she could. There weren't any faster ways to get from one point to another than a sky bison. She had no other options to fret over. An unsecured bag began to slide from one edge of the saddle to the other. Jinpa gave the reins another little yank, and Ying Yang righted himself. Kyoshi caught the sack and tucked it under a lashing. "Is he okay?" she asked. "Does he need to rest?"
"Nah, he's fine," Jinpa said. "Lazy boy got distracted by a school of winged eels. Didn't you, boy? Who's a lazy, distracted boy with a poor attention span?"
He gave Ying Yang an affectionate scratch behind the ear.
"But if you do want to stop, there's an opportunity up ahead with an interesting piece of history. A small island where it's said that Avatar Yang Chen performed her first act of waterbending. Want to see it?"
She did, honestly. Kiyoshi held an intense curiosity about one of the greatest avatars in history, her predecessor from two generations ago. Yang Chen was the woman who'd done everything right. She was the avatar whom to this day was still invoked by people for protection and luck. Kiyoshi often wished she understood Yang Chen's leadership like a real scholar. She'd been making do with her commoner's knowledge of the blessed air avatar who'd successfully kept the world in balance and harmony. She would study Yang Chen's work more the next time she returned to Yokoya. There had to be useful materials in the mansion's great libraries. Right now, though, she was in a hurry. "We don't need to land. I'll take a look from above."
"Of course, Avatar. I'll let you know when it comes up."
Kiyoshi settled back into her seat. The letter under her jacket made a slight rasp against the fabric and a loud scrape against her nerves. She hadn't communicated with Rangi in a long time. Messenger hawks had trouble withstanding the extreme cold of the north, where her mother Heiran had been recovering. As a new avatar, Kiyoshi was always on the move. The mansion was as far away from the northern water tribe as a point in the Earth Kingdom could be. It seemed like the world had conspired to keep them apart and mute their voices. She wanted to think about something else, or talk to someone else. She still found it hard to make casual conversation with Jinpa, and a bison saddle was a large empty seat for one person. She was more accustomed to fighting for space with at least four other people, jostling shoulders, complaining about whose breath stank from eating too much pungent food. After a while, she felt Ying Yang turning into another role, sharper this time.
"So, where's this island?" she asked Jinpa as she balanced herself against the rail. The sea was a flat sheet with nowhere to hide for a landmass. Jinpa leaned into the circle and examined the water.
Everything I've read said it should be around here. I don't see anything but that dark patch under the surface."
"Look, if we can't find it, we can just go. It's not important."
"Kyoshi."
She screamed as a bolt of pain drove into her skull from temple to temple. It seized her by the neck and scoured her vision into a blur. Her hands went limp and lost their grip on the saddle. Kiyoshi keeled over the edge and fell off the bison, her ears filled with the sound of her own name. She hurt the entire way down. A sharpness like daggers bounced from one side of her head to the other. It found an outlet down her spine where it could ransack her body. She was barely aware of how fast and far she was plummeting.
"Kyoshi!"
A man with a deep voice called to her, his words shredded by the wind speeding past her ears. It wasn't Jinpa.
"Kyoshi!"
The shock of cold salt water as she hit the ocean was a relief from the heated agony. She lost her sense of up and down. Her limbs drifted weightlessly.
When she opened her eyes, there was no sting.
Out of the endless blue, a figure drifted in front of her, mirroring her slackness in the water, as much of a prisoner as she. The shape of it was hazy, an ink painting dipped in a river. But she knew who the apparition clad in water tribe furs was. Avatar Kuruk.
Kyoshi, need your help, too.
The voice of Kyoshi's immediate predecessor in the Avatar cycle was much louder in the water, his native-born element. It thundered between her ears.
Kyoshi, you must. I can't. It can pass.
A hand plunged through Kuruk's body, dissolving it into the surrounding liquid like thin syrup. It grabbed Kyoshi's lapels and tugged her toward the surface. The salt water, which hadn't bothered her until now, dug into her eyes with a vengeance. Forgetting she was still below the surface, she gasped for air and got her throat splashed for her troubles. If Kuruk's spell could have kept her from drowning indefinitely, it was broken now. Jinpa kicked toward the rippling sunlight, holding tightly to her with one hand. At first, Kyoshi tried to help him by swimming upward herself. It took her an embarrassingly long time, floundering like that, to remember she was a waterbender surrounded by water. A quick raise of her arms and a rolling bubble carried her and Jinpa to the surface. They burst into the air and emptied the contents of their lungs. Kyoshi hacked and coughed until she could breathe once more. Ying Yang floated in the water nearby, growling in worry.
Are you all right? Jinpa sputtered. Are you hurt?
I'm fine, Kyoshi said. The headache had mostly dissipated into the ocean. I just lost my balance and fell.
Just fell?
Jinpa was as visibly upset with her as an airbender could be. He was raising his voice. He was frowning at her.
It was Kuruk.
Kyoshi squeezed the sides of her head to dull the lingering throb. Her bending spared them the need to tread.
He was trying to tell me something. Avatar Kuruk? You communed with Avatar Kuruk? You looked like you were having a fit.
It's usually not this bad. It wasn't so painful the last couple of times. Jinpa's jaw threatened to unhinge and fall into the ocean.
These episodes have happened before, and you haven't told me? Kyoshi, an avatar communing with their past selves, is supposed to be a hallowed experience, not a life-threatening seizure.
Kyoshi grimaced. She knew. She knew exactly how lacking her spiritual connections were. She'd found out through trial and error. The Water Tribe avatar had manifested before her in his complete form, exactly once in the Southern Air Temple, where he had the gall to ask her for help before dissipating just as quickly. She'd been left in a lurch, not knowing what to do with such a useless vision. But the experience did remind her she had access to a trove of worldly advice in the form of her past lives. A vast wealth of experience and wisdom lay at her fingertips. If she could only master her own spirit. Kyoshi had tried reaching out to previous generations of the cycle by meditating in the sacred places of the Southern Air Temple, wayside shrines of the Earth Kingdom dedicated to the great avatars like Yang Chen and Salai, spots of natural beauty atop mountains and next to flowing rivers. She wasn't expecting it to be easy. She'd read that spiritualists had taken lifetimes to gain the skills of meditation, trance, and enlightenment. Kyoshi had fully prepared herself to be greeted by the silence of failure when she tried to commune with her past selves. What she wasn't ready for, though, was getting jagged fragments of Kuruk. And only of Kuruk. Every single time. The results of her meditations were always the same. She would reach inwardly, attempt to harmonize with her past, and be met by the blotchy form of the water avatar, spitting garbled nonsense. It was as reliable as a dropped stone hitting the bottom of a well. She tried deciphering his mysterious request, but whatever connection they shared wasn't strong enough for her to figure it out. And the sessions often hurt in a teeth-rattling, convulsive way. That was why she'd never asked a sage who'd been to the spirit world to guide her in meditation. She feared the same reaction as Jinpa's if anyone saw her fail so loudly and painfully. An avatar who struggled to reach her past lives was one thing, but an avatar who was violently rejected and roughed up by the process, like a thief caught sneaking into the wrong house, was another. Kiyoshi didn't need her legitimacy doubted more than it already was. Eventually, she'd stopped trying to commune. She hadn't been the greatest admirer of Kurok anyway, and if he was the only past life out of 1,000 generations willing to make contact with her, then she could do without. But sometimes, her predecessor forced the issue and appeared unbidden. "It's not a big deal," she said to Jinpa. "Occasionally, I'll have a vision of Kurok or hear his voice. I can never tell what he's trying to say." Jinpa couldn't believe she was talking about it, like a bad knee aching before it rained. "Kiyoshi," he said, summoning the tranquility of his ancestors to keep from breaking down and weeping at her ineptness. "If an avatar of the past has a message for you, it's usually of the utmost importance." "Fine," she yelled. "The first chance we get, we'll find a great enlightened master and I'll learn how to talk to Kurok. Now, can we please get back to our other top priority mission? Or are you somehow going to fix everything that's wrong with me all at once?" The look of hurt and disappointment on the monk's face confirmed it. Kiyoshi might have been a bad avatar, but she was also a bad master to her secretary, one who not only yelled, but insulted. Not even Genju put his staff down to their faces. She would have thought her experience on the other end of the relationship would have made her better at this. And Jinpa had saved her from drowning. Had she been wearing her heavy robes and bracers instead of a light traveling outfit, she might have sunk too fast for him to reach. "I'm sorry," she said. "Jinpa, I'm really sorry. I've no right to speak to you like that." He would have gotten along better with Yun. The two of them would have become fast friends and played paisho from sunup to sundown. I wish you were serving a worthier avatar." Her apology didn't seem to be quite what he was looking for, but he acquiesced with his usual gentle smile. Jinpa clambered onto Ying Yang's withers and began wringing out his wet robes. Kiyoshi sighed and plunged her face back below the surface, hoping the shame would rinse away. She saw something under the water that hardened her spirit again. The dark patch Jinpa had spotted from above was a wrecked and sunken atoll, an island blown apart and scarred by what could only be bending of the highest power. The reef structure was split and pitted, giant chunks of earth scattered like marbles, and swaths of coral had been ground smooth by unimaginably intense water bending. Kiyoshi recognized the telltale marks of destruction well. This was Yangchen's island. It was the same place where Kurok and his companions had gone so he could practice going into the avatar state for the first time. Maybe they didn't know, or maybe they'd chosen a location associated with Yangchen to receive spiritual assistance from the great air avatar. But Kurok, in his lapse of control, had destroyed the atoll and sunk it below the waves. A spot holy to Yangchen and the air nomads was gone because of his carelessness. As she pulled herself back onto the saddle, Kiyoshi tried to model herself after Jinpa's calm. Some very unkind opinions were running through her head, and right now, the less she thought about Kurok, the better. The reunion.
It was strange to think that getting closer to a string of active volcanoes would make them feel better. But here they were, approaching the Fire Nation. Jinpa wisely avoided the plumes of noxious smoke emanating from the active peaks, but wove yin-yang over the thermals in between, riding bumps of heated air in a playful, winding course. It was enough to make Kyoshi forget herself and smile. Clumps of settlements could be seen on the smaller islands, usually by the coasts, but sometimes higher up in the mountains, where level pastures and shade-grown tea farms dotted the slopes. The land masses formed a thickening tail that led them to the body of Capital Island, where the earth doubled over on itself to form First Lord's Harbor. They swooped lower to see the city that had formed around the Fire Nation's largest port, already preparing for the upcoming celebration. Strings of red paper lanterns crisscrossed the streets, in some places thick enough to completely obscure the carts and sidewalks below. The sharp clack of vendors hammering their wooden stalls together filled the air. Kyoshi spotted one alley, overtaken by a half-finished parade float. A team of dancers practiced their moves in rigorous unison atop the platform. "This seems like a serious party," Kyoshi said. She secretly wished she could be down there, among her fellow commoners for the celebrations, instead of attending a state function. There'd certainly be less pressure on her.
"You know how Fire Nationals are," Jinpa said as he waved at a bunch of gawking children on a rooftop who were thrilled to see a bison fly overhead. "Buttoned up until the moment they let loose?"
They left Harbor City behind and continued flying up the slope of the caldera that dominated the big island. Trees and vines clung tenaciously to the steep, rocky surfaces, and the humidity grew heavy like a blanket.
"Should we stop here and announce ourselves?" Jinpa said.
He pointed to the stone watchtowers and bunkers built into the lip of the dead volcano. Kyoshi shook her head. Impatience was rising in her chest, tidewater threatening to spill over its levees. "The letter said we should head straight to the palace." Sure enough, the pointy armored guards watched them fly by with hardly a reaction on their unmoving faces. Yin-Yang crested the edge, and the capital of the Fire Nation revealed itself like the burst of a firework. Royal Caldera City. The home of the Fire Lord and the highest ranks of nobility in the country. Where Ba Sing Se equated power with expansiveness, Caldera City concentrated its status like the point of a spear. Towers rose into the air, brushing shoulders with their red shingled neighbors. They reminded Kyoshi of plants competing for sunlight, stretching ever higher lest they fall behind and perish. Several glossy shining lakes lay in the bowl of the caldera, one much larger than the others. She'd forgotten their official names, but outside the Fire Nation, they were often referred to as the Queen and her Daughters, renowned for their crystalline beauty. It was said that no boat disturbed them on pain of death, but Kyoshi now knew that to be a silly rumor. Lantern barges were already paddling across the mirror surfaces to set up for the festival. In the center of the depression was the royal palace, stern and barren. It was surrounded by a wide ring of naked beige stone that would force anyone who approached on foot to be unsettlingly exposed to the ramparts and watchtowers. Only within the inner walls did a garden dare to take root, and it was as sparse as a young man's beard. Kyoshi knew that was likely a security measure to prevent thieves and assassins from moving from tree to tree undetected. With defensive concerns taken care of, the palace complex itself focused on grandeur over any other priority. A central spire pointed to the sky, flanked by two golden pagodas with an excess of upturned eaves, making it appear as if the roofs were adorned with animal claws. It looked more like a great shrine than a residence.
The steep angles of the structure would have made it difficult to sneak in from above. Kyoshi mentally slapped herself once she realized she was casing the home of the Fire Lord. The old habits of the Flying Opera Company were sprouting from her head like dormant seeds after a fresh rain.
"Do you know where we're supposed to touch down?" Jinpa said, interrupting her reverie. "I'm a little wary of flying over the wall. I'm guessing that families who own mounted crossbows tend not to like that sort of thing."
"The main gate, but not too close." As a former servant, Kyoshi knew that the higher classes liked their visitors to enter their residences in just the right manner, to be awed and cowed by a well-designed display of culture and power. And the ruling family of the Fire Nation was the highest class it got. Ying Yang settled on the avenue that bisected the stone ring. They dismounted to walk the rest of the way to the gatehouse. On the ground, the bison had a bouncing gait from his single foreleg that made it hard for riders to stay in the saddle. Luggage would get thrown off his shoulders if it wasn't securely tied down. They came to the heavily barred, unbendable iron gate. There were no slats, view holes, or other means to show themselves. Kyoshi wondered if she was supposed to knock, before a grinding metal noise broke the awkward silence. Somewhere inside, the gears of heavy machinery bit into each other, groaning with friction. The gate moved, not outward or inward, but straight up. A girl stood on the other side, revealed by inches, as if she were too much person, too much force for any one mortal to handle all at once. Sometimes Kyoshi believed that. In her mind, the grand scape of Caldera City and the royal palace was nothing compared to the splendor being unveiled right now. The gate finished its agonizing journey with a heavy metallic slam. The archway inside was lit with torches, none of which shone as bright as the pair of bronze eyes that flickered over Kyoshi from head to toe. Other than wearing the armor of a higher-ranking officer that had fewer spikes and overhanging flaps and more gold trim, Rongi looked the same. Her ink-black hair had grown back to its usual length. Her posture was as stiff and unyielding as Kyoshi remembered. And she still wrapped herself in the same air of unquestionable superiority. To be in Rongi's presence was to not meet her standards. A mere few seconds of silence were enough to make Kyoshi tremble. Her worst fears pushed their way to the forefront. Enough time had passed that Rongi might have changed into Kyoshi's former teacher, former bodyguard, former everything. The stillness of the moment was broken by a strange noise that Kyoshi had heard only once before. Rongi laughing and choking at the same time. The firebender slumped over, leaning her hand against the nearest wall, and gasped for breath like she'd been holding it since the gate cracked open.
"I had to sprint over here, all the way across the grounds, so I could look impressive greeting you," she wheezed. "I must be out of shape."
The band snapped from around Kyoshi's heart, giving it room to beat once more.
"Is that how you've been doing it?"
The whole time they'd known each other, Rongi would often be waiting for her, ridiculously early, or she'd suddenly and dramatically appear out of nowhere at the last minute. Knowing she'd simply been running at top speed from place to place hurt the mystique a little. Rongi grinned and nodded as she caught her breath.
"At least I don't have to worry about other Fire Nationals seeing me right now. The only blind spot in the defenses is right here, directly under the gate itself, which means I can do this."
She reached up and yanked Kyoshi inside the wall, right into a searing kiss. Cultural diplomacy. Kiyoshi forgot what she was supposed to be doing, where she was, which way was up. Memories faded before the warmth of Rangi's lips. The two of them melded into each other, alloyed. And then, in a supreme display of cruelty as far as Kiyoshi was concerned, Rangi broke it off and took a step back.
"Welcome to the Fire Nation, Avatar," she said. "Professional once more."
She smoothed a strand of hair that had fallen out of place, but otherwise acted like she hadn't just robbed Kiyoshi of her wits, using nothing but her mouth. The Avatar was still reeling, too dazed to respond.
"Mistress Rangi,"
Jinpa said, stepping deftly around her to greet their host. He bowed, palms pressed together in the air nomad way.
"It's good to finally meet you in person."
Kiyoshi flushed in spite of herself. Jinpa knew who Rangi was, but she didn't necessarily want her secretary witnessing her private moments. Day one of Kiyoshi's first visit to the Fire Nation, she could imagine him documenting for posterity. "The Avatar inappropriately kisses the love of her life while standing in the threshold of the most fortified place in the world."
"Brother Jinpa," Rangi said with a friendliness she rarely showed anyone. "I am honored by your presence. You can leave your bison by the gate while the two of you follow me. Our stable masters are trained in the care of mounts from every nation." She leaned in and gave him a wink. "I let them know that I'd make them suffer immensely if they mishandled your companion."
Jinpa laughed until a look from Kiyoshi told him that Rangi wasn't kidding. His chuckle died in his throat. He went back and loosened Ying Yang's reins.
"Be a good boy and stay here,"
Kiyoshi heard him whisper in the bison's ear, to which the animal made a plaintive rumble.
"Yes, I know she's scary. I'll be fine."
Once Ying Yang was settled, Kiyoshi, Rangi, and Jinpa walked down the tunnel. It had been designed to kill people. Small holes pricked through the iron plates that coated the passageway, apertures designed to let arrows or fire blasts through. The floor was solid but hollow, implying a sudden drop if the defenders pulled a lever. A single cough echoed through the hall before being forcibly swallowed. It hadn't come from them. If each firing hole had a soldier behind it, then a whole troop was watching them go by. Kiyoshi glanced nervously around the iron gullet until they emerged on the other side of the wall into a paved plaza that ran through the garden. The stark nature of the greenery stripped it of any calming effect. A single minister waited for them, wearing the red and black silks of a civilian authority and the unhappy expression of a tightly wound fuss budget.
"Avatar Kiyoshi," he said.
His deep bow made his lengthy gray mustache droop off his face.
"I am Chancellor Dairen, head palace historian. On behalf of Fire Lord Zoryu, I extend our country's greetings."
"The honor is mine, Chancellor," Kiyoshi said. "Where is the Fire Lord? His message indicated that we have important matters to discuss." Dairen's face pickled further.
"He is indisposed at the moment. You will see Fire Lord Zoryu tonight."
This was a brusquer greeting than Kiyoshi was expecting. Though to be fair, she had no business criticizing anyone for their lack of diplomacy. Rangi stepped in to ease the awkwardness.
"I believe the first item on the agenda is the palace tour, Chancellor," she said. "Kiyoshi has been telling me nonstop how she's been looking forward to learning more from one of the world's foremost Avatar scholars."
The flattery was like sticking candy in the mouth of an angry child. Dairen couldn't show how pleased he was for fear of looking silly.
"Of course," he said, frowning harder with all his might. "I assure you it is very long and comprehensive. This way inside, please.
Kyoshi and the others padded solemnly down the corridors of power, as her predecessors had done since the unification of the Fire Islands. The great halls of the palace were empty in a way that could only be achieved by the household staff watching them, moving out of their path, guards and servants shuffling behind corners so as not to offend the Avatar's sight with their presence. Kyoshi knew this trick very well. It gave the illusion of calm and solitude when maintenance of such a great manor required the chaos and numbers of an army. As they walked, pretending they were alone, Dairon pointed out works of fire avatar poetry and policy on scrolls preserved in boxes of clear crystal. Kyoshi nodded appropriately at jewels and gilded hairpins worn in her past lives, tucked into alcoves for display. No toys, she noted, but plenty of gems, daos, engraved daggers. The relics of each nation had their own personalities, and fire and air couldn't be more different. Jinpa asked Dairon questions and begged for elaborations on the answers like an eager student, the two of them slightly outpacing Kyoshi and Rangi. The furtive wink he gave Kyoshi over his shoulder let her know he was purposely creating an opportunity for the laggards to talk to each other. Kyoshi really needed to give him a raise. She didn't pay him anything, the monk serving her out of some self-imposed duty to the Avatar. But he deserved a raise nonetheless. How is your mother? Kyoshi whispered to Rangi. The last time she'd seen Heiran, the woman was barely clinging to life.
Well enough that she wants to speak with you tonight, at your reception, Rangi said,
as if this visit wasn't nerve-wracking enough. Still, Heiran being healthy was a blessing. It explained Rangi's ease, her ability to pick up right where they left off. So who's this Dairon person then? Kyoshi asked. I thought there was a special Fire Nation minister in charge of handling Avatar relations.
They're supposed to be. I don't know why Dairon was the only official sent to greet you either. Maybe Lord Zoryu's having some problems with his staff, but I don't dare ask. I have some privileges from my connection with you, but really, I'm only a first lieutenant here in the palace.
Kyoshi nearly laughed. Only a lieutenant, a rank many adults in the Fire Nation strove for and failed to reach. Rangi's casually overachieving nature was one of the many little things Kyoshi missed about her.
Tell me about your secretary.
Rangi tilted her head at Jinpa's back. What was there to tell? He's part of some kind of secret paisho club, and he acts the complete opposite of an air nomad sometimes. I haven't figured him out, but he's been a good...
And here we are at the Royal Portrait Gallery,
Dairon said loudly, stopping short. Kyoshi nearly collided with him and Jinpa. She was steadied by Rangi grabbing the back of her tunic. She could imagine news of the disaster spreading over the Fire Nation, the Avatar bowling over her entire entourage. The Chancellor hadn't noticed how close he'd come to being trampled. He gazed upward at the walls with sheer pride bursting from his expression.
I could spend days here and never get tired of it, he said.
His reverence was well deserved. The portrait hall was one of the most overawing works of man-made craft that Kyoshi had ever seen. Paintings of the Fire Lords adorned one side, reaching from floor to ceiling, triple the size of their real-life subjects. Cloaked in red and black with halos of gold behind them, the rulers of the Fire Nation looked down at their audience like a race of giants. Even a first-time visitor like Kyoshi could tell that these were works of art that took years, careers, to finish. The late Fire Lord Cheiryu's portrait, the most recent entry into the gallery, wasn't complete. Stencils where gold inlay and orange hues had yet to be filled in spread across the background near his feet.
Rangi nudged her to look at the other side of the gallery. Opposite the Fire Lords stood the fire avatars, painted in matching size and grandeur, equally breathtaking in artistic glory. These portraits were spaced farther apart. Judging by the way there was roughly one avatar per four Fire Lords, and how the gaps were not perfectly even, Kyoshi guessed that the likenesses of her predecessors formed a timeline that stretched down the hall. The viewing party stopped at Avatar Sito, depicted in his trademark tall minister's hat. Where most of the other figures held a ball of fire in one hand, avatars and fire lords alike, Sito hefted an abacus, rendered with as much loving detail as any of the illustrated flames or weapons wielded by his compatriots. Each bead of the counting instrument was set with real pearl, and they were racked to a calculation that ended in an auspicious number. In his other hand, he wielded a stamp made gigantic for artistic license. It was unlikely that the real item would have been so large, or carved from solid cinnabar like it was shown in the painting. Sito would have blanked out whatever was written on the paper he was trying to approve.
"Here we have the namesake of our festival," Dairin said. "The Fire Nation owes a great debt to this man."
"Can you tell me more about Avatar Sito?" Kyoshi asked. "I'm afraid I don't know as much about him as I should." The Chancellor cleared his throat for a long lecture.
"During Sito's childhood years, the Fire Nation teetered on the verge of collapse, struck by plague and natural disasters," he said. "The wrath of the spirits was terrible, and Fire Lord Yosor was in little position to halt the fracturing of the country along the old fault lines of the clans."
"The clans?" Kyoshi said. Dairin sighed, realizing he'd have to cover some remedial history as well.
"Each noble house of the Fire Nation is descended from one of the old warlords from the period before the country was united. That is why the noble clans retain certain rights, such as governance of their home islands and the retention of household troops. During Lord Yosor's reign, the clans set their warriors against each other, ravaging the countryside in futile bids for power and resources. Many historians, myself included, opine that without Sito's intervention, the Fire Islands would have splintered apart, reverting to the dark days of Taz the Cruel and the other pre-unification warlords who caused so much suffering for our people."
Kyoshi was surprised at how much this story sounded like the Yellowneck Uprising. From what she always heard as a commoner, the Fire Nation was a model of harmony and effectiveness, the counterpoint to the bickering Earth Kingdom polities. Sito's era was not that far away in the distance of history. She didn't have to fake her interest or rely on Jinpa for this part of the tour. "What did he do to fix the situation?" she asked.
"He applied for a job," Dairin said. "Though as the Avatar, his material needs would have been met and his decrees heeded. Sito took a government post as a minister of the royal court, technically subject to the same rules and regulations as any other official. He showed up to work at the capital and sat at a desk. Furthermore, he insisted that his career advance at the pace of his achievements, rather than leapfrogging his seniors just because he was the Avatar."
"And that helped?" Kyoshi said incredulously. "It turned out to be a brilliant strategy," Rangi said. "Rather than chase emergencies all over the nation, he concentrated his efforts on a central location and spread his influence from there. Sito was an extremely capable bureaucrat, accountant, and diplomat. And since he was working for the royal family, there was no split in legal and spiritual authority in the country. His victories were the Fire Lord's victories." Dairin nodded, satisfied that the youth of today were being educated suitably about their nation's past.
Once he was promoted to Grand Advisor, Avatar Sito was able to end the open hostilities between rival noble houses. A lasting peace followed, in which he continued to serve his country with dignity and excellence.
He put an end to the debasement of coins, Rangi said. It rescued the economy from the brink of disaster.
One of the scrolls we passed on the way here said he set up the first official programs to give relief to the peasantry in times of famine,
Jinpa said.
And most important, he kept proper records of it all,
Dairin said. He wiped the corner of his eye out of habit, as if he'd been moved to tears in the past when thinking about Sito, and was just making sure right now.
Truly, Avatar Sito was an ideal for us officials to live up to, and a shining example of Fire Nation values in general. Efficiency, precision, loyalty.
Kiyoshi gazed with new admiration at the dour, long-faced man, whose festival they were here to celebrate. She liked this Sito fellow, or this version of herself, as it were. A strong work ethic and an eye for organization were traits she respected. Perhaps she should have tried communing with him instead of focusing on Yang Chen so often. Dairin graciously allowed their party to drift toward the art pieces that interested them. Kyoshi wandered over to the portrait of Lord Cheiru again. Knowing more about him could help ingratiate her with his son, the current Fire Lord Zoryu. Kyoshi tried to interpret some of the imagery. Cheiryu's theme seemed to be vegetation. She could see bundled rice stalks, a harvest bounty. There was a penciled outline yet to be painted, a detailed flower arrangement with two blossoms sprouting from the same vase. In the vessel, a large stone camellia greatly overshadowed a smaller winged peony. That was odd. Kiyoshi knew the basics of flower arranging in the Fire Nation style, and that kind of off-balance spacing was normally frowned upon. In real life, the bigger plant would have blocked off the sunlight from the lesser one and caused it to wither. Chancellor, she said, I have a question about these flowers. Dairin tensed up unnaturally at the word flowers. He hurried to her side with a sense of dread, not waiting for her to ask anything, and peered frantically at the stencils like he expected some sort of unpleasant revelation. It took him a little longer than Kiyoshi to see the outlines, but when he did, his reaction was unmistakable. The Chancellor turned white and trembling, and beads of sweat gathered on his nose.
Do not speak of this to anyone but the Fire Lord,
Dairin muttered under his breath. Wait, what? Kiyoshi had heard him clearly, but she didn't understand the life or death conviction in his voice. The Chancellor clapped his hands, the sharp noise startling Rangi and Jinpa, who were still looking at other paintings.
The tour is over, he declared.
His eyes darted to the entrance of the gallery, fearful of the empty space.
Avatar, my apologies for prattling on when you must be tired from your journey. I will show you to your accommodations. Immediately.
The floors and walls of the Avatar's quarters in the Fire Palace were so laden with antiques and artwork it could have passed for a small museum in itself. For the remainder of her stay, Kiyoshi could look forward to enjoying landscapes painted in cinnabar, vermilion sculptures of preening birds, tapestries woven with carmine threads. The overwhelming redness of the space made it hard to tell distances inside. The room where she was going to sleep might have been as big as the bottom level of Longkao.
I feel like I'm staring directly into the sun,
Jinpa said. He pressed his palms against his eyes and blinked.
It took me a while to get used to so much red again myself, Rangi said. She sat down on the corner of what Kiyoshi had thought was a large raised platform and bounced softly, which meant that the scarlet quilted square wide enough to hold a lei tie on top of it was the bed.
Agna Kula is the same thing, only with ice. You need special goggles to move around the brightest parts, or else you'll go snowblind.
The mention of the north made Kiyoshi's innards clench. It was a reminder of how far Rangi had journeyed to seek treatment from water tribe healers for her mother's poison.